What's the one thing all great teams have in common?
Great coaching.
Try to suck up to me, Evelyn.
I'm Gordon Bombay, the new hockey coach.
All right, let's go! Line B, come on!
We're Team USA, gathered from all across America. And we're going to stick together. You know why?
Because we are ducks, and ducks fly together.
It's the Quack Attack Podcast.
Hey, everybody. This is what I gave up my overtime pay for. I'm Mike. That's Tommy.
Hello, everyone.
Kevin is not here. Allegedly still important at his job. Could not find the time here, but we'll press on without him. Welcome to the Quack Attack Podcast, the definitive Mighty Ducks podcast. We are back another week closer to Mighty Ducks Game Changers launching. Hopefully we'll have more stuff. I've put out some feelers, try to track down Emilio and whatnot. So we'll see if those come through. But in the meantime, we have the winner of Quack Question of the Year 2020. It was at 28_8KBPS tweets, aka Nigel. Duck called the Nigel. And we offer Nigel the chance to come on. If that is his real name, I don't know. That's his Twitter. That's what it says on Twitter. He said he humbly declined. He just, wants to remain a man of mystery, I guess. So congratulations to him anyway.
It's truly remarkable to find someone so humble, particularly among our Quackalites. We're used to the Jared Beasleys of the world just DMing us all the time. So appreciate that. Someone who's not clout chasing, as the kids say. really nice to see someone who might win an election and be so humble.
Wow, just throwing some unnecessary shade at Jared Beasley. So, Jared, I think you're a humble guy too. Just direct all hate mail to Tommy, or actually just direct it to Kevin. He's not here. So he's the one who told Tommy to say that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it was a close race, Quack Question of the Year, as I put out on Sunday night. Michael F. and Nigel were separated by 2 votes, and then Nigel really came through at the end, ended up with about 8 percentage point lead by the end of it. He had a 5 percentage point lead. I can't do math. He had about 42% of the vote. Michael F. had about 37, and everybody else fell off dramatically. Bill hung in there for a while. Bill had the question about Charlie's mom and Mr. Hall. Which I liked, which was probably would have been my pick, but we are people's podcast. It's not my choice. So, Nigel really pulls away with it with his little big league to Mighty Ducks crossover. Here is the question again. He said, so I've been thinking about this more than I should, but I'm 100% convinced that Little Big League and the Mighty Ducks take place in the same universe. In Little Big League, the Twins are playing for the wild card, which means it must be the 1994 season. Billy Hayward is 12 years old. D2 was released in 1994 and believed to take place in 1994. With the Ducks 1 year removed from Pee-wees, then it's safe to say they are 12 to 13 years old. This means Billy Hayward and the Ducks are about the same age in the same city, and both are celebrities. It's possible that they know each other or have met, or maybe Billy and Adam Banks even go to the same school. Also in the Mighty Ducks, Jesse and Terry's dad complains about missing overtime to attend games. Does he get a second job in Little Big League? Who shows up as the security guard in the Metrodome? The Hall brothers' dad. To top it all off, in D2, Gordon Bombay discusses endorsements and investments and his big ideas, the Air Bombay Loafer, for kids who want to coach. I believe he makes this happen, and Billy Hayward is the face of the Air Bombay Loafer. We obviously discussed extensively when it came up last year. We agreed with his assessment. We said, Billy is probably the spokesperson, even though, managers don't wear loafers during games, but he's also the owner. They have to travel. We think he still, as a spokesperson, does commercials for it. So a lot to go on there. We're going to expand on it a little bit. In the absence of Nigel, we're going to expand on it just a bit. First of all, do we think Billy Hayward and Gordon Bombay are successful in this endeavor now that he's got a big time, probably the biggest name in kids coaching attached to his line?
Well, if you're going to get a name attached to the line, it's going to be Bill Hayward. and be interesting to see. So there's a part in Little Big Lead where Billy, who tries to kind of seem less like a kid, so he goes by Bill instead. And so you gotta be interesting, which it's like the Captain Blood alternative, Gordon Bombay. So, you know, which William Haywood is going to be signing on here? Is he going to be the, you know, the Billy Haywood who's like fun and loves it, or is he going to be the Bill Haywood who's like serious and businesslike? And so that could really dictate the tone of some of these like marketing and ad campaigns they have. So it could be successful. I think it really depends on, you know, how big is this demographic of kids who want to coach. I think, you know, kids would want to coach, but it's like the fallback. Like when you're 12 and 13, you, even though you're like, you might have like what they call a podcast body, you probably still think there's a way for you to go pro.
Yeah. Yeah. You're sort of selling the dream, kind of how the like whole stats revolution did it for a bunch of people. Like, hey, they weren't good enough to play baseball, but they could work for an organization because they were smart and they had like the data analytics, and it sort of kept the dream alive for all those people. You make a good point about Bill and William and Billy Haywood. Like, we could see this end disastrously as Bill Haywood gets a big ego, sort of pulls a D2 Bombay, starts hanging around with the wrong people. And then he's all of a sudden not the greatest face for these loafers. So that is my worry, that Bill Haywood sort of goes off the rails after his early success, kind of child star-esque there. But do we think he has like a sound enough mind to make it through all this?
I think he does, especially because he makes a very grown-up decision to step away from managing. You got to figure he would probably be more of like a Jerry Jones type owner, GM, possibly. Although, in like you said, baseball GMs are, you know, the smart guys, the Ivy Leaguers. But at the same time, would people not want to play for him? You know, there's a part in the Big League where like people don't like the idea of like playing for a kid, which I think makes sense for executives, but I think players would be like, well, just give me as much money as you want. I don't give a shit who I'm playing for. Which is evidenced by some other questionable owners in other leagues across the world. You know, I think he's got what it takes. I think especially because their all-star Lou, first baseman, marries his mom. So he's going to keep them grounded as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, the mature decision to step away, I'd forgotten about that. I it's been a while since I watched Little Big League. I should have watched it as we prepared for this pod.
And if we think that Little Big League is also in the same universe as The West Wing, then Lou becomes a very successful reporter, including but not limited to the Dallas Morning News, among the other papers that he works for.
Wow, Lou, quite the life for Lou there. Yeah, that's a good point. He's got a father figure in his life. He's got some money. Yeah, I think he could make it. I with the right guidance, I think he can make it. Now, when this first, to change gears a little bit, when we first discussed this, there's some Twitter talk at GiantKing135528. Mentioned to us on Twitter after the episode came out, there was a strike in 94. Are we talking about a different universe? Because I'd be fine with that. Nigel responded. He said, I think Little Big League is meant to portray the 94 season if it had been played out. If the movie, in the movie, they have a playoff game to determine the wild card winner, and MLB 94 would have been the first season of the wild card, but due to the strike, the first wild card winner wasn't until 1995. The question here, so when the strike stopped in 94, the Twins were in fifth place in the division. They were 14 games back. So, I mean, it is possible they have this owner and they find, I guess, they find fire down the stretch there and make it into the wild card spot. So, I guess this would work. But the way, I guess, the facts are presented, I guess it has to be the 94 season. I was not thinking about the whole wild card aspect of it. So, just quite a run for Billy Haywood in that 94 season to come all the way back, make the wild card, sign on. Is there anything else in terms of the crossover? We talked about the security guard at the Metrodome. That kind of fits with Terry and Jesse's dad. You know, he's got to give up his overtime pay to see hockey games on the same nights as Twins games. Air Bombay Loafer, it all makes sense. The only question, I guess, we didn't really cover are Billy and Adam Banks. Do we see them running in the same circles?
Billy and his friends in the movie seem a little bit more down to earth than Banks, although Billy gets a big head. So I don't get the sense that Billy is like super duper popular. Also, for essentially being a mega millionaire's child, he is very down to earth, or not child, grandson. Very down to earth. So, and Banks's dad has been well established as being like a piece of shit. Billy's mom seems very, very nice. So I don't get the feeling they're running in the same circles, even if they were at the same school. But maybe like Banks's dad and Billy's grandpa are at the same country club. So maybe they see each other once every couple months and they're like at the batting cages or something.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like Banks is at like a sort of obviously a higher income level, but I feel like Billy is like way beyond that even. So he's probably in some sort of private school. Banks maybe.
Well, he's definitely in public school based the scenes in the documentary. Mm. But they are pretty modest. Now, of course, Billy's dad is not in the picture, and we don't really know if Billy's grandpa, the former owner of the Twins, had a lot of other kids or anything, but he does say that Billy was his best friend. Very touching, of course. So I don't get the feeling that Billy has been, you know, spoiled to death or anything. And it seems like his mom is also a better parent than Banks's dad.
Yeah, so we're saying Billy probably lives like a relatively normal life then. So maybe he doesn't live on the same level or way above Banks there. So
I like to think that they're like grandpa and Banks' dad are part of the same country club. And so they've crossed paths.
Yeah, but they aren't like best friends.
Right.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, this all fits. Obviously, the Quackalites agreed they voted for. Just a great question. The first of maybe many crossover questions. So we were discussing it. And obviously, Little Big League, classic of the genre, along with the Mighty Ducks. So in honor of the Quack Question of the Year, in honor of 28_8kbps tweets, we are going to discuss, you know, the best and worst kids sports movies, maybe relate them to the Mighty Ducks, figure out if we're crossing paths anywhere else. So send us your thoughts, because there are a lot out there in that time period. Obviously, you have the big ones. You have like Little Giant, you have Big Green.
Are we just doing kids sports movies or sports movies in general?
I would say kids sports movies, ragtag team. Well, maybe not ragtag team, but team comes together, or maybe you have a Luck of the Irish situation where things get crazy.
Sports is a central theme to it. Like Brink, it's about soul skating.
Exactly. Obviously you have the Air Buds.
There's angels in the outfield, angels in the end zone. Is there an angel in the goal?
I don't think so. I think they stopped after that. But there's a lot out there. Tell us your favorites. If you have any theories about them, especially as they relate to the Mighty Ducks, we want to hear it, because we're going to make a whole episode out of it. We're going to go through, because again, there are a lot of them, from the big ones to the Disney Channel ones to everywhere in between. Tommy has one he wants to discuss. We'll leave that as a little teaser, but it wasn't a good one from what Tommy tells me. So.
It's a baseball movie. And so if anyone can guess it, good for them. I remember watching, I was like homesick one day and my mom had just like gone to the store and she's like, oh, I found this like movie for you. I was probably like 11 or 12. And I remember watching it and being like, this is a piece of shit. And when I'm like, and when you're an 11, you like every movie you see.
Yeah.
I did watch it a few times though. I can tell you how bored I was when I was sick. But looking back, we'll get to it. I remember it pretty vividly, even though I haven't seen it in 20 years. So I look forward to talking about it.
There you go. So yeah, we'll have Kevin come back, hopefully, you know, assuming he's actually doing what he says and is not like sneaking away and being in some random foreign country that we don't know about in a jail. But he'll come back. He has a lot of, you know, knowledge from watching all that kind of stuff. So I'm excited for it. I'm excited for this episode, but we need your help. So send it out there. For now, we're going to move on. So we skipped the quack question last week because, you know, we were waiting for the quack question of the year to finish. So we're going to come back with two quack questions here, both sort of related to coaching, which I think is interesting. So, Tommy, do you want to talk about the original Mighty Ducks D5 coach, I should say, first, or Ted O'Ryan?
Let's talk about the original D5 coach, because he is enigmatic.
All right. So this one comes from Danny, formerly at DReisner12 on Twitter. I don't think he's still on Twitter. But he says, hey, guys, what happened to the original coach? We know he had a heart attack, but I don't think he died. I assumed he just couldn't coach anymore. Does he follow the Ducks season? Is he rooting for them? Does he ever coach again? And then he says some nice stuff about, you know, thanks for doing the show, and he looks forward to our cameos on Mighty Ducks Game Changers. So what happened to the original coach? Obviously, he had a heart attack, couldn't coach. We've discussed him a little bit, just about how he had that heart attack, and, you know, he might have been involved in some nefarious stuff. But does he follow the Ducks season? Is he rooting for him? Both good questions.
So one thing I don't think we've talked about is, do we think that this coach had any connection to any of the Ducks players? Like, was it someone's uncle, someone's dad, someone's older brother?
I mean, that's a good point. You would figure it would be, just with the way youth sports works, but
that level with like crappy team, you know, you got to figure you got, you know, someone's dad is coaching the team or someone's mom. I never got the feeling that it was, or maybe that kid's no longer in the team, because if it was, that's all they would talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be interesting. Like, we talk about Peter Mark's broken home. Maybe this is what broke it.
Yeah, I mean, he does seem...
Although they just kind of make fun of him.
Yeah, he makes fun of him, but maybe it's because he hated him or something. Maybe he was a mean parent or guardian or whatever it was. Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to... people who were there who didn't maybe say much and just sort of like left it. We know Karp comes from a loving family. That's established. You have Goldberg. You have obviously Charlie's dad not in the picture.
Was it Guy's dad? And that's why Connie is like all over him. It's like she feels sorry for him because he just lost his dad.
Maybe. I don't feel like Guy's dad would be that mean
actually.
To him, though.
Let's assume it's actually another criminal, like some kind of community servicing a la Bombay.
Yeah.
So it's a criminal of sorts. And I guess they give guys who get DUIs, they allow them to coach hockey.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be like a really like easy crime that this person did. I think he coaches them, has a heart attack, and like never thinks of them again until he reads like USA Today the next year and says, what the fuck? Like, these kids that I coached are playing the Goodwill games are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he follows the duck season at all until maybe, you know, he reads a Let's Play Hockey about the state title game and how this team came together and made it to the championship. So yeah, maybe he even misses that though and doesn't see them until the junior Goodwill game. So once he sees them in those junior Goodwill games, is he rooting for them? Like, does he, you know, turn the corner and be like, oh, those were my kids? Does he feel any sort of pride because he, quote unquote, coached them?
I think he does eventually. He probably sees one of them like around town or something like that. Oh, I'm so proud of you kids, you know. Maybe he realizes how much of an ass he was, or maybe he relapses and he's in prison. We know what Kevin would say.
Yeah, I think he sees them junior girl games, reads it in USA Today, roots for them. Like, he roots for, because he roots for USA, but I don't think he's rooting for them necessarily because, you know, they were his kids. It certainly seemed like he didn't want to be there and the kids didn't want him there. So he had the old heart attack. Whether that's real or fake, he might have just faked the heart attack and said, I couldn't do it.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So does he ever coach again?
No, doctor's orders.
Oh, doctor's orders. Yeah, that would make sense. Like, if you had a heart attack coaching youth hockey, you probably, there's probably something wrong with you.
Also, it seems to have had some anger management issues, which A, probably led him to like get this community service, and B, have a heart attack coaching these kids. So he can't put himself in that kind of scenario. Yeah. So I think he never coaches again. And perhaps maybe he died shortly after the heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, made doctor's orders. Maybe his doctor was just like, hey, maybe it's not a good idea if you're a coach. Like, you can do your community service by, you know, picking up trash on the road or something like that.
What other community service would he do then? He can't really be a physical activity. Volunteering at a soup kitchen, maybe, where you're just...
Yeah, or like...
Doing some...
Maybe he works for a charity and does like administrative work or like
administrative duty for a charity
or something.
Yeah. Gotta make sure he can't steal anything though.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So he'd have to be supervised, but I think there's organizations out there for him. So to recap what happened to the original coach, obviously we don't think he died right away either. But he, you know, lives a pretty bleak life there. Does he follow the duck season? No. Is he rooting for them? Kind of, but not really. Does he ever coach again? We say no. So, anything else on this other Ducks coach before we move on?
No, but you got to wonder, like, and this is probably something just to ponder. How did this crappy coach get involved to begin with in terms of Hans pulling the strings? And so, when Bombay got his DUI or whatever, did Hans like somehow induce the heart attack, switch his pills around or something like that, get the coach opening? Something to think about, something we'll ask Kevin about.
Yeah, no, that is a good point, because like I think there's two ways you could go here. There's, yeah, this coach was just a coach and Hans sort of opened this opportunity for him, or, you know, this was one of Hans's guys. He was the Gordon Bombay before Gordon Bombay, and he just never got them going, and he never had the whole change of heart. So, yeah, maybe this is something Hans does where he funnels select people to this team or to this league to coach so he can take advantage of them in some way. So, yeah, a lot to think about with that. Yeah, we might have to revisit this one. The more we talk about it, the deeper we go here. All right. So the next one comes from Ron. He says, first time writer, long time listener. Thanks, Ron. Duck call to Ron. I got the duck call here. I'm going to use it. Duck call to Ron. He has an observation that I think needs a bit more exploring if you're so inclined. So we've talked about this a little bit, but Ron goes deeper. So I wanted to revisit this. He says, Ted O'Ryan is massively overqualified for the job he has as a freshman coach for Eden Hall. He's a former NHL player who used to play for the North Stars, and I think he deserves a bit more credit for winning 10 consecutive state championships. After all, it's O'Ryan who coaches the players before they get to varsity. He's shown throughout D3 that he's the first coach to teach the kids about real hockey. He clearly is a good coach, so what is he doing teaching a bunch of knucklehead underclassmen the basics of hockey? He's not getting the varsity gig because of the success that the team has had over the years. He clearly doesn't like the politics of the school because of the administration and the boosters' constant meddling in and with his team. I know he wants to be near his daughter after her accident, but why doesn't he have a varsity gig of his own at another private school in town or some smaller role with the University of Minnesota's hockey team? Bombay, I believe, vouches for him, which is my first red flag, because Bombay doesn't know anything about character. Bombay knows a lot about Orion's situation with his daughter and past, as he explains to Charlie, but did he divulge everything he knows about Orion? My theory is that Bombay and Orion go way back, because there may have been a time when Orion needed Bombay and Duxworth's legal services, and that is the reason why Orion is not employable beyond the current job that he has. Am I crazy here? Maybe. He doesn't say maybe. That's editor's note. Orion is hands down the best coach the Ducks have played for, but there's something fishy about why he has that gig in his first place, and taking into account how massively overqualified he is for that job. Let me know what you think. So like I said, we've discussed Orion on the freshman team. We sort of said our theory was that he was the coach in waiting. They had made him the deal that, hey, you're going to be the varsity coach when the varsity coach steps down, which is going to be relatively soon. And then things went south, and Orion actually did a big thing when he quit the team, because he knew he was quitting the varsity job as well. Or when he said, basically, it was me or the kids. So the thing that Ron gets into is this whole Bombay-Orion relationship, which does seem fishy. Do we think that Bombay and Orion were friends before that? Did they have contact before, or I guess further contact beyond just Bombay sort of knowing who he is in town?
So here's my theory, and I'm going to try not to be too long-winded. So as far as Bombay and Orion, Bombay went to Eden Hall, that's established. And so I think that Orion also has an Eden Hall tie. They seem like they could be a similar age. Maybe they, like, one was on varsity when the other one was freshman, vice versa. And so they know of each other. And clearly Orion, if he played in the NHL, he would have been one of, like, the best player in the team, like, easily. Mm-hmm. And maybe he was at Eden Hall for like a couple of years before he went pro or something. I think Orion is at Eden Hall because of loyalty, and that being potentially being the coach in waiting. But also I imagine Eden Hall, if he was there when his, you know, daughter had the accident, then, or if his daughter was there, there's like, hey, like, don't worry about, you know, tuition or anything like that, or we're going to make every accommodation for your daughter as possible so she can, like, continue to get her education, blah, blah, blah. And then same thing, like, if Orion was like an assistant, or they said, hey, we've got a job for you so you can get benefits to pay for your daughter's treatment or something like that, because he was like leaving the NHL. And so maybe he leaves the NHL, he gets like this assistant coaching gig to get benefits, and he's just got a tremendous amount of loyalty for Eden Hall. And he is obviously a great hockey mind. So maybe he's a JV coach, and there also could be some things like, maybe he doesn't have like a certain certification where he could be a varsity coach. Mm-hmm. Which could be either some state that's more of a public school kind of thing. I think it's a good topic to explore, but I think there's an Eden Hall connection before, and it could be that Orion either played there, or maybe he like played against them at some point, and that's how Bombay like knew of him. But also, if he was a pro player, then you'd think that Bombay would know who he is, and then you'd think some of these Ducks would know who he is as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. So Bombay and Orion, you figure, like you said, both Eden Hall alums, we're assuming here, probably ran in the same circles, whether it was the Eden Hall circles or the hockey circles or both. So yeah, it's not out of the ordinary for Bombay to know who he is. The fact about the kids not knowing this guy who played in the NHL would probably, I guess it's the 90s, like you don't have the internet, like, well, you don't have the internet the way it is now, where everybody's on there. So who knows how much they know? You would figure that'd be something that Eden Hall touts, like you have this former NHLer who's the coach now. The accident, yeah, I think is key, as you mentioned, the loyalty. He also has a little more time as the freshman coach. You'd figure it's not as demanding of a job as the varsity coach. So maybe he values that because he wants to be there for his daughter.
That's a really good point. Although you would think that he's also like at the varsity games and like an assistant on the bench, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. He's probably there.
But he's not game planning for these varsity opponents, or he probably is doing something. He has some responsibility, but he's not the one staying at the office till like 9 p.m.
Yeah, it's a good point though. Like in Texas high school football, what happens is, you know, the varsity coaches, they coach their game the same time the JV or the middle school coaches go and scout the next opponent. So I don't know if that's a similar situation for Orion, which would be actually more work for him. We need some Minnesota high school hockey experts on this. Well, maybe we'll talk to Bo Brower about this situation. He played for Edina. He could give some insight. But yeah, I mean, he's not, you figure the varsity coach has a lot of obligations just for the boosters and things like that, that maybe Orion doesn't go to. Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the question that he's been offered varsity gigs elsewhere and he's just turned them down because of the loyalty here. So yeah, maybe he's not as nefarious as Ron is thinking. Ron is just always looking for the worst, which, you know, in with our podcast is not out of the question.
So I don't want to leave us on a down note, but Orion, what was the accident that got his daughter?
Oh.
Was he drunk behind the wheel? Is that how he knows Bombay? Were they in like an AA meeting together?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think we just busted this open. I think Orion, yeah, maybe Orion turned his life around after this accident. This was rock bottom.
Yeah, he was like a hotshot athlete and then... Although yeah. He would have done some serious jail time, but maybe it was all swept under the carpet. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Like, how did his daughter get in this accident is a very deep question that I don't know if I'm prepared to, like, really confront. But if that did happen, it would make sense, you know, and maybe he begged and pleaded with Eden Hall to, you know, keep his job, or maybe they were the first school that like gave him like, okay, you can be the freshman coach. And you know, we'll sort of hide you. And then obviously turns his life around. Maybe things start looking up for him, but he knows that this whole, that Eden Hall was good to him. And he sort of feels that responsibility, that loyalty, to stay with Eden Hall, until these crazy Ducks come in. But to be fair, the boosters were being kind of crazy as well. So a lot to ponder here. We just opened up another can of worms with this accident. Tommy, your thoughts. Do we think that Ted Orion was responsible in some way for his daughter's accident?
I'm going to say yes with a huge asterisk that he's responsible because he was like supposed to like pick her up from school or something and he wasn't there. Because maybe he was out doing something kind of related to his celebrity where he's like, you know, your mom can just pick you up. I'll get you like next time. I gotta, you know, I'm doing this thing, you know, this is important to me. And so because of it, it's kind of like a butterfly effect. He makes a decision that impacts it. And so he feels guilty, even though he is not at fault.
Right. That makes sense because that is much easier for him to get a job working with kids and not like a community service thing. Although who knows, in this world, it's possible that Orion's doing community service as well. But if you're that freshman coach on Eden Hall, probably not. That would make sense. That would make sense why he feels the loyalty to obviously his daughter, also to Eden Hall. You know, they gave him a job when he quit the NHL. So yeah, I mean, it would make sense. Maybe Bombay and Ducksworth team were involved in the accident or involved in sort of litigating the accident in some way, whether they, you know, represented him or something like that. So I think that is the most plausible explanation without all the fact. We don't have all the facts. So that would make sense because good standing, probably is getting some other offers, but turning them down because he loves Eden Hall. Eden Hall's, they basically created this job for him when he needed to step away from the game. And then he also knows Bombay knows him and has a little inside info on him. So I think we figured this one out. We started high, went very low and sort of ended up in the middle, which makes me feel good about that. But for us, quackattack.com, go there, contact us. At Quack Attack Pod on Twitter, facebook.com/QuackAttackPod. thanks to our producers. We got a new executive producer, Brian Berg. Duck called Brian. Our other executive producers, Elsie Barnett and Alex Shabara. Producers, Deborah Chen, Adam Ferry, Joyce Ng, Jared Beasley, Lisa Wobig, and Anthony Geoffrey. Thanks, guys. You make the podcast go. If you want to join them, there's a link to donate in the show notes. We appreciate it very much. Anything you can spare, you know, $1 a month. That's $12 a year. So you can go there. You can go to shop, get your gear, and go to iTunes. Give us 5 stars. Tell us what you think about Ted O'Ryan's past. And remember to send us your best and worst kids sports movies. You know, they can be 90s related, but I'm willing to go back. If you have...
I'm willing for any era. I'm very curious for ones that were released, particularly in like the last decade that, you know, you might've missed if you were, you know, our age in your 20s or whatever. Be curious of the quality, and if there's any that are available, like on a streaming service, maybe we could try to watch a couple.
Yeah. So send us your recommendations, and I don't know, what's the opposite of recommendation? Unrecommendation?
Tell us, I want to watch some of these train wrecks, all right? You know, yeah. I worked at Blockbuster when I was in college, when it was on its last leg, and part of the fun was renting these terrible movies that you know were going to be trash, and you would just watch it with your buddies and drink, and like, those are fun movie experiences.
So there you go. I agree. And remember, ducks fly together.
Ducks fly together.
Ain't no turning back. Got to be the man of the